Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
All righty, hour number three of our radio program. Zach Yelb Show, CBS Sports Radio. John Calipari, about to get introduced as the new head coach of the Arkansas Razorbacks. Cal the Hogs is what they're saying right now. Very creative off of Call the Hogs. But the Pig Suey chant is just absolutely phenomenal. Some Arkansas fans got annoyed with me when I did the Pig Suey chant. Clint Sterner, you know, the guys may know him. He thought I did a great Pig Suey chant, but some thought I didn't emphasize enough of the W in the woo. And it was just, I sounded like a wolf when I was like, woo. Like, come on. Is that what we're really doing here? Whether I go woo or woo. Like with the Woo Pig? I didn't think I did anything wrong. I think for someone that is from the East Coast and from New York, I do a phenomenal, spectacular calling of the Hogs with the Pig Suey chant. I feel like you disagree there, Santer?
No, it was good for a New Yorker.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, if you're going to do it, there's a certain level of, you know, respect that goes behind it that I think the fan base takes a lot of pride in, and you know, you got to really live up to it. You did a good job for a Northeasterner, but I mean, compared to like the passion and the energy and the pig suiness.
So I don't have 10 beers in my system when I do it, when I'm drunk at a football or a basketball game. I can't be drunk on this show, then they'll fire me.
Anymore, you mean?
Why, I've been drunk before on this show?
No, well, I mean, I don't know. Have you?
Man, just outed me on the national radio airwaves.
I'm drunk right now.
Ooh, Pig Suey! Ooh, Pig Suey! Ooh, Pig Suey! Razorbacks! Man, my pits are sweating today. That's when I just realized that I'm doing that. My armpits. A lot of sweat underneath those armpits. Man, now my ears are ringing from that Woo Pig Suey. Was that good enough for you, Standard?
Better.
Oh, better. Who are you, Simon Cowell on American Idol? You tell me I'm rubbish? You tell
better
me I'm trash?
Trash.
That's a no for me, dog. Randy Jackson. Is American Idol still around, right?
Yeah, it's like Katy Perry now, and what's his name?
Don't try to get me to. I knew it as Paula Abdul, Randy Jackson, and Simon Cowell. That was about it.
Lionel Richie. So Katy Perry, Lionel Richie, and Luke Bryan.
Luke Bryan is on that?
Yeah, you got to get a little country flavor in there.
Gotcha.
You know, Katy Perry's a star, I guess, but like they're all nice. The cool thing about American Idol was Simon Cowell just being a jerk. Right,
yeah.
So like none of the Katy Perry and Luke Bryan, they're nice.
You need
a mean person.
It was a good trifecta of people because you had Simon Cowell, who was like the jerk, Paula Abdul, who was like sweet, and you had Randy Jackson, who would just be the checks and balances of like he wouldn't be afraid to rip you, but he did it in what was like a nice way to get ripped, and then he would also keep Simon Cowell in check as well. By the way, who'd you say was Luke Combs, you said?
Luke Bryan.
Oh, Luke Bryan?
Yeah.
You know who I've listened to a lot recently? And he's phenomenal. Have you listened to Zach Bryan?
Oh, yeah. Zach Bryan's great.
Zach Bryan. So Springsteen was brought out to one of his shows, and I did not know that Zach Bryan looked up to Bruce Springsteen, and that song Revival, he had Bruce Springsteen come on out and perform it with him. So I knew of Zach Bryan before this. I actually was offered 2 Zach Bryan tickets to the Super Bowl this year to go to one of his concerts, but I didn't end up going because that was the night we ended up going to the Sphere and going to U2. So I knew of Zach Bryan before, but once you bring my guy Springsteen on stage with you, then I fall basically in love with you and I'll give you a chance. And I've started listening to Zach Bryan the last 3 weeks, like religiously the last 3 weeks. He's phenomenal. That's going to be my jam this summer. I'm going to be on the beach. I'm going to have my Bose speaker. And I'm just going to be playing a bunch of Zach Bryan. He is sensational.
Yeah, country music in the summer. Like, even if you're not a big country fan.
Yeah, I'm not even a huge country fan, but I respect good music.
Country in the summer, right? With like a cold beer in your hand, mm-hmm. just sitting outside.
Toes in the sand.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So, big fan of Zach Bryan.
I'm sorry for pulling you away from Zach Bryan for the U2 at the Sphere.
Well, that was worth it.
Yeah.
Now, that would have been cool because it was like a 5,000-person setting. So it was real, really close and personal and awesome. But the Sphere was just ridiculous. You know, I was, outside of having a few drinks, you know, this is meant for another way. I was pretty much sober at the Sphere. And I felt like I was not sober. Like, I just felt like I was out of my mind, losing my mind with all how do you kind of say it at the Sphere? The imagery?
Yeah, the graphics.
It was crazy.
Yeah,
I felt like I was at a 3D movie. That was wild at the Sphere. I highly recommend going to the Sphere.
It's a once-in-a-lifetime kind of opportunity.
So I'm going to Springsteen on Friday. That's why I won't be here. At Mohegan Sun. I cannot wait. That's a 10,000-person venue for Springsteen indoors. That's going to be phenomenal. So looking forward to that. Anyway, let's get to Caleb Williams because Donovan McNabb's going to join us coming up in about 10 to 15 minutes or so. So let me just go around the room here before I play Greg McElroy's comments. And keep this concise. Samter, what do you think the biggest criticism has been about Caleb Williams? Like, what's the one singular moment that you think most people are extremely critical about with Caleb Williams?
If it's one moment, it's just the crying with his mom and just his reactions to some of those losses.
Stu?
Same. The crying.
Right?
Yep.
That's probably the one negative thing that we've heard about Caleb Williams, where he lost, I think it was Washington, and then he jumped into the stands and he was crying in his mother's arms. When I saw that, here's my legit reaction. I've never seen a quarterback do that. I don't really care, but I couldn't see like a Tom Brady or a Peyton Manning, a Patrick Mahomes, when they lost the game, like jumping into the stands and crying in their mom's arms. But like, it's not as if I was irate about that. The other thing that people give him crap for, and I didn't think he should have done this, let me be clear, when he painted his nails and wrote F Utah on them and then also lost to them. Like, you can't lose. If you're going to paint your nails and say bleep Utah on your nails and have it spelled out that way, you got to win that game. And he didn't win that game. But the way that I look at Caleb Williams' tenure at Oklahoma and then USC, he is deserving of being the number one overall pick in the draft. He's the best quarterback in this draft. And the only negative thing that I could really say about him is the game that I was disappointed in him that stands out to me and registers in my mind. And everyone's entitled to a bad game. But what we said about Caleb Williams going into this year was they're not going to lose because of him. They're going to lose because of the defense. Because we all knew that Lincoln Riley was stubborn and he refused so long and waited so long to get rid of Alex Grinch, the defensive coordinator. But in that game, and Stu, you probably remember this, Notre Dame. When I was watching that game, and I know it didn't live up to the hype of some things that happened before that, but it was like USC Notre Dame before the season started. It was supposed to be a huge game, and we know what that game has meant. But in that game, Caleb Williams stunk. He was bad. Now, everyone is entitled to a bad game. And if I look back at pretty much a 3-year career of tape, if I could only really point to one game, it means he's a damn good quarterback. But that's the one game. It's amazing. No one brings up the Notre Dame game when talking about Caleb Williams, which is the one tangible thing that could give you cause for concern if you want to go down that road. And instead, Everyone talks about, oh, he painted his nails and said, bleep Utah, and then he lost the game and jumped into his mother's arms and cried. So I don't really have concerns about Caleb Williams on the field, but I do wonder with what you heard, I think it was Jalen Johnson of the Bears, who was like, all that Hollywood stuff is going to fly in our locker room. You got to be the alpha because this is now your team and you're the face of the franchise and you're the leader. But the thing I'm most curious about is because it feels like there's a perception out there about Caleb Williams is how will Caleb Williams immediately connect with that locker room? And ultimately, it comes down to wins and losses. And the Bears have never had a 4,000-yard passer. So the standard's pretty damn low. Like, there's some organizations we talk about winning, and we know what that means. It's a Super Bowl. But for other organizations, winning isn't always the Super Bowl. And I do think Caleb Williams will be able to do enough winning initially where any of these concerns that people have won't end up actually being detrimental to the football team. But he's in a good spot right now. He's in a good place. Chicago has a solid roster, and this should be able to work. But if it doesn't, it's almost like you look at the Bears and just one of those teams, they never have a quarterback. And then you wonder, like, if this doesn't work, I hate to say it this way, but then they'll probably never find their quarterback. But let's hear Greg McElroy. He had a major flaw with Caleb Williams. This is on This Is Football podcast with Kevin Clark.
Guys that ultimately go on to become elite players, every single one of them has a gigantic chip on their shoulder. They're mad at the world, or they create some type of false narrative about themselves that people don't believe in them. Caleb Williams has never had that. He has never experienced adversity. Very little adversity as far as how he was received and how he was portrayed as the next best guy. But I do wonder about, is there a sense of entitlement? Is there that chip on the shoulder that's going to keep him going 10, 12 years down the road? So I think the chip on the shoulder aspect is something that I've valued more in recent years. And I'm just not 100% sure that Caleb Williams has that.
I know we live in a different era now where everyone has the ability to answer back publicly instantly with the power of the phone. If I'm Caleb Williams, and I like and respect Greg McElroy a lot, but if Greg McElroy is saying something negative about me or something you don't like, I'd be like, who cares? But Caleb Williams right away gets on social media and he said, let's go back to school again because I'm bored. Adversity is a state or instance of serious or continued difficulty or misfortune. And then he lists, didn't start my freshman year, popped my hammy in the championship game first quarter, lost because of my hamstring, 7-5, my last year of college ball. So like Caleb Williams is saying, I've overcome adversity. I don't know how much serious adversity he's had to overcome because he's always been tabbed as the guy. But I do wonder, and this is a big part of it, when you're the face of the franchise and you were supposed to be the star, naturally people are going to say things. I'm not saying this is what Greg McElroy did, but there will be some people that say things just to get a reaction out of you. And you got to learn how to deal with all that and also learn how to just ignore it. You know, Nick Wright said this recently to Angel Reese, and I talked about it as well. We've all grown up in an era where we've had social media or we've had a phone in our hands and access to the internet. And with that comes a lot of good, and with that comes a lot of bad. You sometimes just have to log off. Like, there are times on the internet where I have been slammed. I have been trolled. I have had people say, like, the meanest things possible to someone. When I was younger, I would respond to a lot of it. But now I understand this comes with the territory of being on a national radio network like this one. So I'm not saying there aren't days where you don't let it get to you, but 9 times out of 10, you have to learn how to just ignore it and not respond. And I do wonder, with people forget how still young Caleb Williams is and how there could be some sensitivity, if when he gets criticism, if he'll be able to not highlight that criticism publicly. And I walk away from this exchange, and that's like a concern I have about Caleb Williams. But It doesn't mean that I don't think he shouldn't be the number one overall pick and I don't think he's going to be a great player, because right now he's going to be the number one overall pick, and we have not seen a quarterback since, what, Trevor Lawrence? That has consistently been this hyped for several years in college football, and everyone knew they were going to be the number one overall pick. Now, I say that with Trevor Lawrence, that's the other side of the argument. Trevor Lawrence had a bad year because of Urban Meyer, then a good year, and then he was hurt this year and it was underwhelming. They just paid Josh Allen today a mega contract, and now it's like, okay, this is a make or break year for Trevor Lawrence. So just because you're tabbed as the guy doesn't mean you end up being the guy, but I don't see why anyone would pass on Caleb Williams with the number one overall pick. Number five, Donovan McNabb, one of my favorites, going to join us on the other side. And this is Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. Donovan McNabb is going to join us right now for a few moments as we gear up for the NFL draft. Number five, appreciate the time as always. How you been, my friend?
I'm doing outstanding. How are you, big guy?
Well, I'm doing fantastic. Appreciate you jumping on board with us. What do you make of the coverage of Caleb Williams? Like, everyone knows he's going to be the number one overall pick. I don't think a lot of people could really be critical of him because there's not a lot to be critical about. Is it just prospect fatigue with him a little bit, and is it maybe a little bit overblown in some of the negative criticism?
I think at this particular point, this is when you get closer to the draft, where everyone starts to nitpick what's going on with the individual, trying to find negative aspects of their game and try to compare them to the other quarterbacks that are in this draft. And for some people, they try to compare this class and crop of quarterbacks to the past. And it's unfair to them because you look at last year's class of quarterbacks and the previous years, they're different. And Caleb's a guy who I think if he came out 3 years ago, he still probably would be the number one pick. He's that talented. He has the ability to extend plays. He has great accuracy from the pocket. We've seen him stretch the ball downfield, so his arm strength has never been in question. The thing that I looked at for Caleb was I thought he was about 6'3", and he's only 6'1". So maybe that becomes one that you look at. But when you start trying to nitpick a little bit of his game to the point where you're saying he's not worthy of being that pick, then you're really doing too much.
Yeah, and you have some people, you go back to when he lost and he jumped into the stands and cried in his mother's arms. Like, do you think that will be an issue on how he'll relate in the locker room at all? Because that's what some people are saying, I have to ask.
Not at all. Not at all. Some guys may take what the media, if they decide to continue to harp on that or bring that up, some guys may use it as a joke. But no, not at all. I mean, if you look at every locker room anyway, I mean, probably a high percentage of guys in the locker room have both parents still alive, both parents still a part of their lives. Some are from single-parent homes, and those that are really from single-parent homes or even those from both parents in the household, I mean, we're all mama's boys at the end of the day. So will we run in the stands and give mom a hug or no? No, not at all. Will we be painting our fingernails? Probably no, not at all. I mean, you know, so I just think this class and this generation, really, of just athletes in general are way different than they've been in the last 10 years.
Well said. Donovan McNabb here with us at two. You a Jaden Daniels guy, or are you more so a Drake May guy or someone else for the Commanders?
Well, I've had a chance to meet both of them. I've known Jaden Daniels since he was a freshman here at Arizona State, talked to him many a times, and I got a chance to reunite with him at the Super Bowl. And we're going to continue to talk and just try to help him out in many ways of preparing him for what he's going to be faced with. I got a chance to meet Drake May down at the ACC Awards last season. Bigger guy than I expected, but, I mean, had a great career, early career at North Carolina. He's a young guy. People don't realize how young he is coming out into this draft. I believe he's just 20 years old. And so I look at the all three quarterbacks, they're young, they're inexperienced, they're going to have their learning curves, there's going to be some adversities. But I look at those two particular guys, and they're two different type of quarterbacks. Yes, they're both mobile. Who's more accurate? I would probably say Jaden Daniels is more accurate. Who's more of a pocket passer? I would say probably Jaden Daniels. Who's the bigger guy that can absorb a little bit more contact? Yeah, Drake May is. But both have upsides. And it depends on the organization that drafts them. Because if you have an offense who does not have a lot of weapons, your offensive coordinator is a first-year guy calling plays when we know he came from somewhere else and the head coach called the plays, then, yeah, guys like Drake May are going to struggle. We've seen that what happened out in New England when you decide to draft Mac Jones, and then you don't know who the offensive coordinator is. You know, so I think if you're looking at a situation where you have an experienced offensive coordinator, he has an established receiving core, a running game, offensive line is shaky, and they can go into the draft and pick get some offensive linemen. Yeah, Jaden Daniels may be your guy because he's a little bit more polished from the pocket. So I just think for this class, and it goes all the way to Spencer Ratliff, it goes to Pratt, it goes to all these quarterbacks that are coming out. There's going to be highs and lows, but are you willing to be patient for 3 to 4 years with your quarterback? Because if you go 2 years and all of a sudden you're looking to go into the draft again and find another quarterback, then no one's going to be successful.
And that's the tough part, because a lot of people say Drake May needs to probably sit a year, but if he gets picked in the top three, you know, unless you got a Brett Favre or an Aaron Rodgers or someone like that in front of him, you know this. People don't have patience anymore. They expect the player to play right away.
Well, I mean, it really, to be honest with you, I'll look at it in this sense. If you draft a guy in the top 15, a quarterback in the top 15, and you have an established guy, if the established guy comes out in the first 8 games and he's 5-3, offensively, they're middle of the pack. They're averaging maybe about 27 points a game scoring-wise. Defensively, if they're struggling and 27 points a game is not enough, because remember, you got to understand, in this game, it's about shootouts. Now, defense is like, you get 10, 12, 15 sacks, and it's like, oh, this guy's outstanding. And it's like, they're throwing the ball 35 times a game. But if you're drafting a guy like we're having this list of quarterbacks, and you have an established guy that the starter's 5-3, then you can sit him. But if he's 4-4 and the offense is sputtering a bit, where maybe 2 or 3 games, they've only put up about 13, maybe 17 points, then it's going to be public cry. It's going to be public cry. So you got to be willing to deal with that part of the crowd being involved, where now you're forcing yourself to throw the young guy in there when he's not ready.
Donovan McNabb here with us. Just judging by what I read, it feels like the latest J.J. McCarthy will go in this draft is 6th to the Giants. Where's your reaction if a team has taken J.J. McCarthy within the first 6 picks?
I think we're overreacting. And listen, I think J.J. McCarthy is a good athlete. I think in that system that he ran, you have to look at Jim Harbaugh and how his system has been run. Now, Jim Harbaugh hasn't had an established quarterback at the University of Michigan. Nobody that has been in that position for 3-4 years and then graduated and have moved on to possibly in the NFL or wherever. He's always changed up his quarterbacks, and it's always been a young phenom. Look, Melton was a guy that he recruited and brought this 6'5", strong arm, could get the ball 80 yards downfield. He didn't start very long. And then I think the kid that was before J.J. McCarthy, who transferred to Iowa, he was the starting quarterback that got them to the BCS playoffs. He got them to the playoffs, and they played against Alabama and got killed. And he was trying to get J.J. McCarthy in there because he hasn't had an established quarterback. I'll take this back to San Francisco. When Alex Smith was there, he was trying to get Kaepernick some plays in there, to groom him, and all of a sudden moved on from Alex Smith. And then it became the Kaepernick show. And so I just look at it in the sense of J.J. McCarthy, and it may come off wrong, and because we all had this whole thing with game managers and game records. But to be honest with you, I think J.J. McCarthy might be in that class because he won't wow you with anything, and he won't change the game. Now, if you want him to manage the game, then yeah, go ahead and draft a guy, the sixth pick of the draft, to be a game manager. That's not going to go over well. And so I just think people need to kind of pause a bit when it comes to J.J. McCarthy moving up in that top 10. I think he's a top 18, top 22 pick for those like the Raiders or somebody maybe later on you want to draft a quarterback because he's there, best available. But I don't think that you go in the top five or top eight to get J.J. McCarthy.
Do you think Michael Penix Jr. has been disrespected in this draft process?
I think he's been highly disrespected in this draft process. To me, to be honest with you, he is the best pocket passer in this draft. Now, I say that, and then also on the flip side, he's been the most injured. And I think his history of injuries is the part of the reason why we're not talking about Michael Penix Jr. in that top 10. Because one, he's older, he's transferred, and he's been in college, just like Bo Nix, seems like forever, seems like when I was back in college. But his injuries are part of the reason why I think a lot of people aren't talking about him in the top 15, top 18. Here's a guy who's, let's be honest, he ran a 4.4. Who expected Michael Penix to run a 4.4?
Not me.
When you watch Michael Penix run, it's almost like watching Patrick Mahomes. Like, you start to like, like get out of bounds. But then he runs a 4.4, and it's like his athletic ability, I think, is scary because that part of his game hasn't been shown. Back in Indiana his freshman year, yeah, you've seen it a little bit before the first injury. But ever since then, it seems like he's worked so much of playing from the pocket and getting the ball out with time. That's what the NFL is about. I think a team will move up in that first round, that later first round, and draft Michael Penix Jr. like they did with Teddy Bridgewater and also with Lamar Jackson.
Wrapping up with Donovan McNabb. So the Cardinals are sitting there at 4. Kyler Murray needs a number one wide receiver. Do they have to take Marvin Harrison Jr., Malik Nabers, whoever you want to go with, or team calls you and offers you 3 first-round picks to go get a quarterback? Would you be okay, right? Like, Kyler Murray got to want the wide receiver, but as a quarterback, can you see getting all those other first-round picks?
I think the best thing for – and listen, Marvin's my guy. Everybody knows that, and I love Marvin Jr. The thing about Marvin is he's a game-breaker, and he's a game-breaker in a sense that if you have a quarterback – in an offense that continues to spread the ball around, gets it into the receiver's hands or their weapons' hands and allow them to create plays and create big plays for you, then he's going to become a superstar. I think the best thing for the Cardinals to do is to trade back, get more picks. If you're possibly able to get 2 first rounds and maybe a early second and a mid-third for that particular pick, I think that's what you do. Because what's going to happen is, they're going to end up drafting a quarterback. They're going to draft a quarterback. They can then get their wide receiver about in that top. I think if you move down, you get to about 9. And you're still able to get one of these good receivers. But I think they need to fill a little bit more holes in this draft, meaning on the offensive side and then also on defense. They got to be much better on defense.
Last thing I'll ask you. So we know the Eagles got Saquon Barkley. They traded Hassan Reddick. They brought in Bryce Huff. We've seen Jason Kelce and Fletcher Cox retire. With everything that happened at the end of the season, now it's going to be a new year with some new faces. Where's your confidence with the Eagles as football will be coming right around the corner come the fall?
Well, the confidence is where it was last year when I said that I think that they would get back to the NFC Championship. The thing that's major for them is being healthy. It's being healthy, number one. Number two is continue to build that continuity on offense to get back to what we've seen a year and a half ago. Not last year, but the year before. And I thought they wavered a little bit from it because they started trying to feature guys too much instead of just running offense. And on defense, I need to see a little bit more on defense. You just traded away your leader in sacks. And then you bring in a guy who – is almost very similar, but not as established as Reddick was in this defense. And so a lot of eyes are going to be on Huff. A lot of eyes are going to be on Gardner back in the back.
Yeah, Gardner, you know, with Johnson.
CJ. I think when you look at, because they've been missing somebody in the middle of that defense at the safety position that can cover and also be able to come in and down and fill the hole a little bit and be able to create some tackles or some game-changing plays. But at the linebacker position, too, I expect them in the draft to go and get a run stopper from the defensive line and also a run stopper and someone who can play the pass at the linebacker position. And then their secondary has to be better. They got to tackle better. If we tackle better in Philly and then get back to running our offense, running the football and play action game, then Philadelphia will be okay.
He is Donovan McNabb, number 5. Always great to catch up with you. Thanks so much for doing this today.
Thanks a lot, Zach, man. You have a great day.
You got it. You as well. There he is, Donovan McNabb, joining us on the Zach Gelb Show on CBS Sports Radio. You know, I can't wait to see where Michael Penix Jr. goes. Because for him, if he falls a little bit, which it feels like it's going to be the case, you may end up going to a better situation. And I look at Minnesota. Minnesota, to me, is actually the team that I'm most fascinated by in this draft on who they're going to get. Because it feels like if they're trading up, and they're desperate to do so, they already got the extra first-round pick with the trade with the Texans, they're probably either going to take Drake May or J.J. McCarthy. But let's say if someone beats them to the punch and they don't trade up and then they have the pick 11 and they're still there and 4 quarterbacks are off the board. Like if Michael Penix Jr. walks in there with Justin Jefferson and Addison, you got to be feeling wonderful. Now, Addison and Jefferson, we all know, are 2 great weapons. My only concern with Michael Penix Jr. outside of the injuries, he's a great deep ball thrower. He's probably the best deep ball passer in this draft. But it's the underneath throws. Like, you go back and watch that championship game against Michigan. I know they have a great secondary. They were just saying, don't beat us deep. And when he threw the ball underneath, that's when he had his mistakes. And that's when people were like, maybe Michael Penix Jr. is not as great as the way that he played this past year. But I think he'll be a first-round pick. There's going to be 5 quarterbacks going in the first round. Because 1, 2, and 3 will be quarterback, quarterback, quarterback. And then, yes, I get it. Last year, it was 1, 2, and then Anthony Richardson was 4. And then we didn't have another quarterback after that go until, you know, in the first round because Levis fell to the second. But this year, there definitely will be quarterbacks taking the first 3 picks. There will definitely be 4 in the first 6. There will be another team after the Giants take at 6, whether the Giants get the quarterback or if someone usurped the Giants, where there will be a 5th quarterback that goes in the first round. So you know that the 5 quarterbacks are going to be taken in the first in some order. Williams, Daniels, May, McCarthy, and Michael Penix Jr. We'll come on back with a news brief update time first. Here's the Ackman, Rich Ackerman. It's time to answer Ask the Pros question of the day. It's brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Mike in Moiseville says, Zach, do you think John Calipari's going to get booed when he returns to coach against Kentucky as the HC of Arkansas? Who is that Mike in Moiseville? You could submit a question by tweeting at CBS Sports Radio or at Zach Gelb using the hashtag Ask the Pros. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts. For all your car care needs, get guaranteed low prices and excellent customer service from the professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts. I am surprised that 56.4% of the people say booed. 43.6% of the people are with me that he will get cheered. I'm trying to see the other side of the argument, and I think I have found the other side of the argument. I think most Kentucky fans realize what John Calipari did was extremely successful, even though it did wear off at the end. And I do think a lot of fans realize him leaving isn't the worst thing in the world, especially when you have the avoiding of the $33, $34 million buyout when a good contingent of the fan base wanted him out anyway. And yes, he goes to another school in the SEC, and I get all that. I don't think this is a real contentious divorce, but Samter, here's where he could get booed. And I know you've been in the camp of booing. Funhouse actually chimed in on this poll question, who does a great job on social media. He's like, there's no chance that he's getting cheered. Calipari, we know, is going to take a lot of these recruits from Kentucky. And that's when it could get ugly. That's when it could be filled with animosity. All these guys that were supposed to come to Kentucky when they start to commit to Arkansas because they fell in love with the money that Coach Cal will offer them at Arkansas, and they also fell in love with John Calipari. That's the part we haven't talked about. It's a transfer portal part of this. Or it's guys decommitting and then committing to Arkansas. That's when it gets ugly. Now, you want me to ruin your boo argument here? Why, you're on board, right, fully, that Calipari is going to get booed when he returns?
No, not fully.
But you would vote booed over cheered.
I think it's going to be noticeable enough. I don't know about booed over cheered, but definitely noticeable enough that you're going to be hearing boos.
So, Hot Take Hickey was in the newsroom?
Oh, no.
And Hot Take Hickey is a dear friend. And I said, hey, I got an interesting question for you that Santa brought up. John Calipari, more booed or cheered when he returns to Kentucky? He's like, first time back? Absolutely more booed than cheered. So, hey, do with what you want with that information.
And the poll is now defunct.
And the season's over.
Here's the first pitch, and the season's over.
I did pull a Hot Take Hickey the other night. I mushed my Mets intentionally, where I was like watching this team, and I'm like, oh, they stink. And I tweeted out, I've seen enough of the Mets. And they come on back and they beat the Braves two nights ago. So how do you like them apples? All righty, let's update you some of the biggest stories in the world of sports with some audio. We get to a news brief.
Time for your daily news brief. We get you caught up on the rumors, reports, and reconnaissance from the day in sports.
Alrighty, let's hear from Bulls coach Billy Donovan, the two-time national championship-winning coach at Florida and was on the Kentucky staff in the late 80s and the early 90s. And he is flattered by Kentucky's interest in him.
You always are, right? But like, I haven't spoken to anybody. And listen, I'm friendly with John. You've known him for a long, long time. You did a phenomenal job. Obviously coached against him quite a bit when I was at Florida. And obviously I spent time there. I understand the magnitude of that place and the history and the tradition and everything that goes into that, you know, that place. And it is flattering to be mentioned, you know, with a school and a tradition like that in this game. But I also know that, you know, people will speculate of what may or may not happen. And you know, I understand the interest in Kentucky basketball, but I mean, has John even actually left? You know what I mean? And they're speculating what's happening.
Boy.
You know, it's just like, I'm sure the athletic director hasn't even made any phone calls if he has. You know what I mean? I don't even know. So, like I said, my focus has been on our team.
As Carly Rae Jepsen would say, call me maybe. He wants the phone call. He is begging for the phone call. And I heard the entirety of that 4 or 5 minutes where he's like, I'm committed to Chicago for now. He wants them to call it. Let's go to Justin Jefferson. He was talking with Kevin Hart about Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase on the LOL Network with Kevin Hart. What a name.
Get into the National Football League and him getting to play with Joe.
Yeah.
You go, you with the Vikings. Was there a little bit of jealousy that they get to keep their thing together?
You know, just a little tad bit. I love them together. I love the chemistry that they have with each other. But, you know, there's definitely some jealousy on that side.
So I see that last night, and people make it out like that's Justin Jefferson saying he wants to go to Cincinnati, and he's so jealous of their relationship, and he wants out of Minnesota and they have that contract. That's just a normal human reaction. Yeah, these are my teammates. They get to play together. So, yeah, there's jealousy. They're one of the greatest college football teams of all time. I think this is a non-story. Let's go to Woody Johnson talking about non-stories. We thought for a while that Aaron Rodgers was going to be running for vice president with RFK Jr. Here's Woody Johnson on Fox News on Rodgers flirting with the VP nomination.
He is getting back to football 100%. He never left football.
Okay.
But that was a momentary distraction, maybe like the going in the dark room or whatever. But he's back 100%. Great leader. I tell the receivers, you count to 10, hold your hands up and look around. The ball will be there. You know, he's going to be really good. If we can keep him on his feet, which I think we can, it's going to be an exciting start to the season.
going into the dark room or whatever bat bleep stuff he's done. That was good. Here is Draymond Green whining about the double standard with how he's officiated.
I get hit in the face every single game, and I get no foul calls. I hit somebody in the face, I get thrown under the jail. But when I get hit in the face, we don't see it. I get hit in the face every single night. Like, and it's, I'm not sure one time it's been called, but I blow my breath on somebody and we're reviewing it for a flagrant foul. I don't get it. It's crazy to me.
Yeah, because you have a long history of doing the wrong thing. This is what I hate about Draymond Green. And this is what makes him such an unlikable athlete now. He plays the victim card when no one has any sympathy for him, and he's not the damn victim. You literally get a pass for everything. You punch a player in the face or your own team, they were afraid to punish you. Yeah, you had to miss a few weeks after you put a player in a chokehold and then punched another player. And now this guy, I don't get the calls. You bet your ass you don't. Oh my God, he's insufferable. Finally, here is Dirk Nowitzki on the Kicking It on Paramount Plus. Messi or Ronaldo guy?
I'm a Messi guy.
I'm a Messi guy.
I don't know how he carries himself, how he plays. He's a little super quick, super fast. Ronaldo, to me, the shirt off and the hey, look at me. It's just not my style. It's not my style. Messi, to me, is way more low-key, and that I could identify more with that.
This is out of my league. Stu, Messi, or Ronaldo? Just give me the answer.
Messi, no doubt.
Samter?
100%.
Ooh, from our soccer snobs. They're Messi guys. Big time Messi guys. Will you guys go see Messi when he comes to New York?
Yep, I already have tickets.
Oh, look at you. Thanks for the invite. Really nice. Wonderful. It is Zach Gelb's show on CBS Sports Radio. The MLS actually reached out to me. They're like, oh, we'd love to get to New Jersey for a game. I'm like, yeah, I'll come when Messi's in town. They're like, oh, that's the one game we're not comping people. I go, thanks. Probably won't end up taking you up on that offer then. Maybe we'll go as a show. You guys love soccer. Maybe we'll go. We'll have some fun. Fun show today. Big thanks to each and every one of you. Also like to thank Bart Winkler, Alex Myers, and number 5, Donovan McNabb. We'll talk to you tomorrow, everybody. We out. Bye-bye. Peace.
Hey, everyone, this is Brett Boone. Would you know it? I've got a podcast going strong in our fourth year. Tune in as I sit down with my friends, some of the biggest names in sports, media, entertainment, for a lot of fun and in-depth conversations. As you know, baseball's been my life. It's been in the family for a long time, but it's a lot more than that here. It's sort of like taking a ride in a golf cart around a beautiful track. Join me every week for multiple episodes on the Brett Boone Podcast, available on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
As the flowers bloom this season, so can your dream home. Start living your best life with our move-in ready homes available today. Our built with care homes give you quality craftsmanship that will exceed your expectations. Picture this: open floor plans perfect for family gatherings, with private backyards for grilling and entertaining this summer. Tour one of our 11 plus communities located in the Greensboro area today. Visit eastwoodhomes.com. That's eastwoodhomes.com. Eastwood Homes is built with care.